Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Danny Werfel, Acting Controller of the Office of Federal Financial Management at OMB. Also joining us in our conversation is Deborah Kammer-Hines. Danny, the President's Management Agenda, or PMA, focuses on five government-wide initiatives, including improving financial performance. Can you tell us about the PMA's objectives for improving financial management and the results that have achieved to date? And how does OMB define and measure financial management success among federal agencies?
Well, Al, as we discussed earlier, there are billions of dollars moving in and out of federal agencies, sometimes on a daily basis. And what the President's Management Agenda recognizes is that you have to start with a strong foundation of good internal controls and good accounting. You have to ensure that you have the right people, the right process, the right technology to account for the tremendous volume of funds that are moving in and out of the government in a variety of different complex transactions. So what the PMA, or the President's Management Agenda, does is it says, in order to elevate from the red score, which is the worst score you can get, to a yellow score, which is the middle score, and obviously green score is the top, we hold agencies to demonstrate that they have that strong foundation. Well, how do you know that an agency has a strong foundation of good accounting, good internal controls, good people? So what we do is we've established indicators, things that we can look at to give us an indication that that the pieces are there. And those things are things like, did the agency get a clean audit opinion on its financial statements? Are they reporting their financial statements within the tight deadlines that we've provided? Are they eliminating their material weaknesses, which are findings that the auditor provides that says these problems force us or cause us to call into question the reliability of some of what's being reported? Are they being compliant with laws and regulations? This is the objective criteria that we're going to use to say the foundation is there. And then what we say in the President's Management Agenda for Financial Management is you get to green based on what you build on that foundation. So a green agency is one that demonstrates that all the compliance elements are met, that they understand where their key risks and business goals are in the organization, and that they're using data, timely, reliable data, to inform on those business risks and business goals. And we've made tremendous progress in this area. We have hundreds of agencies, but 24 major ones that make up the bulk of all federal expenditures. And these 24 agencies also happen to be 24 agencies that are listed in the Chief Financial Officers Act, which first established the requirement to do audited financial statement. Of the 24 agencies, as we sit here today, we have 19 with clean audit opinions. Since 2001, we've seen a significant reduction in the number of material weaknesses that auditors identify. We had 62 government-wide material weaknesses in 2001, and we have 41 today. That's a 35%, approximately 35% decrease. So in terms of this foundation piece, we see a lot of agencies getting to where they need to be. We have 15 of the 24 agencies are either yellow or green, which means that they've done what they need to do to meet all these various compliance requirements. 12 of those agencies are also demonstrating that they're using information to drive decision making.
Now, Danny, there's still several federal agencies that are receiving a red rating in financial management. From your perspective, the way you describe it, why is it so challenging for federal agencies to get beyond the red?
Well, for the first point, we have very tough standard to get to yellow. We don't just require a clean audit opinion, which is in and of itself, as I described, very challenging for a federal agency, many of our federal agencies. You think about an agency like the Defense Department, the Department of Homeland Security. These agencies have thousands and thousands of employees, myriad of different programs, many different missions, many different information technology systems, just a huge amount of data that needs to be accumulated and aggregated accurately and timely. But our yellow standard says not only do you have to get a clean audit opinion, you have to get down to only one material weakness, which is challenging also for the agencies, and all the compliance elements too. So the first thing is that it's a very high bar to move off red, especially for agencies that are of the size and magnitude. Now, not that they don't work very hard at the National Science Foundation. They do. They're a great team. But they're a $5 billion agency, which sounds big, but in government terms, it's a relatively small agency, with a relatively straightforward line of business of providing grants. Agriculture Department, $40, $50 billion agency, so many different missions, so many different types of lines of businesses. And for them to get a clean audit opinion is very challenging. And to eliminate those material weaknesses, again, very challenging. The other thing is that the financial leaders today, they're inheriting old systems and old processes and data that isn't always as clean and as pure as you'd want it to be. It's a very difficult thing. We've learned time and time again that the status quo is hard to overcome in government. You can look at it half full. You can look at it half empty. We started the PMA in 2001, and we had one green agency, the National Science Foundation. Now we have 12 and three additional ones that have met that foundation that I described of good internal controls and accounting. So I like to look at the glass as half full, and clearly we have a lot of work to do. But for those 11 remaining red agencies, some of them are getting very close.
In addition to the Improving Financial Performance Initiative, the president has also established additional PMA initiatives such as eliminating improper payments and right-sizing the federal government's real estate. Could you tell us more about the Improper Payments Initiative? How are the federal agencies doing in this area? And what still needs to be done in order to achieve the fiscal year 2011 target of eliminating $20 billion in improper payments?
Well, the Improper Payments Initiative, I think, is one of the more important things that we're doing, not just because it has a direct impact on the Treasury and how much money we have, but for me and for my office, we look at what we do as trying to build trust in government, that at the end of the day, everything that we're involved in, improved accounting, improved control, smarter decision making, it's so that the taxpayer and the citizen can feel more comfortable and have more reliability that the government is acting as an effective steward of their dollars. I would venture to guess that people outside the Beltway might not know about clean audit opinions. Even though that's fundamentally important to us, it might not resonate with them. But what will certainly resonate with them is if John Smith got a $10,000 payment and should have only gotten a $3,000 payment. When we make mistakes like that, when the process fails and we issue checks that we shouldn't, pay for services twice that were only given once, that is something that compromises trust in government. And so the Improper Payments Initiative is designed to let the American people and let the public, let Congress know what the extent of the problem is and describe the steps we're taking to improve on the problem. Now, the initiative works like this. We basically take every outlay in government. We have $2.7 trillion leaves the government each year and goes to a non-federal entity, whether it's an individual, a university, a company. And what we do is we ask the agencies to put those outlays or those payments into two buckets, a high-risk bucket and a low-risk bucket. And we give them some guidance on what kind of factors to look into, whether the program's very complex, you know, the amount of outlays that go out, how many times the money hits a different party. So every time that money touches someone else, there's a risk of an error being made. So those are the types of things that we would ask an agency to look at to put in high risk and low risk. And we take that high risk bucket and we do statistical sampling. We sample payments and we evaluate what the errors were in the sample that we took. And then we extrapolate that out to the universe. So we might take 200 samples, say we found 17 errors, and then at the end of the day, we extrapolate that out and we say, this is our improper payment amount. Then what we learn from that, we try to identify now why were these mistakes made so that when we go in and we sample that same program the following year, we hope to see an improvement. Just to give you an extent, from the ones we measured, and we measured the hugest bulk of them in 2004, we identified $45 billion in improper payments total. Those same programs measured last year in 2006 measured $36.3 billion. So we had a precipitous drop of about $9 billion. We're trending in the right direction, and a lot of agencies are hitting their targets to try to reduce improper payments. In the coming years, some of the programs out there that are big ticket programs that we need a measurement on and don't have, for example, are Medicaid and school lunch and temporary assistance for needy families. All of those programs are planned to have improper payment measurements made public in the next year or two.
The federal government also owns hundreds of billions of dollars in real property assets. So improving the management of these assets is important to ensuring that taxpayer dollars are spent wisely and efficiently. Would you tell us more about the Federal Real Property Asset Management Initiative?
I think real property is my favorite topic to talk about because we've had such amazing success in this initiative. I think it's really a poster child of success for the president's management agenda. And for me and OMB, this interagency initiative worked very well. And we really need to look at what went right to see if we can mimic it in other interagency efforts. But the way I think about the real estate initiative is we knew there was a problem. We had a lot of surplus and excess property that we didn't need, that we had property that we did need not in the right condition, that we were operating properties at inappropriately high costs. So what we set out to do was to get, for the first time, a comprehensive inventory of every property the federal government owns, every building, every structure, every road. And we've done that. It was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, but we did it. But not only did we find out where all this property was and report it, we did a very smart thing, I think. We also required the agencies, when they report their properties, to give us some very significant facts about each property. And those facts are, is the property mission critical or mission dependent for your organization? What condition is the property in? Is the property fully utilized? And at what cost are you managing the property? What that allows us to do today is to tier our properties. You know, we have a system now where we can run a query basically and say, show me all the properties that are not mission critical, that are underutilized, that are in poor condition, and that are running at a high cost. It goes back to kind of that risk management concept. Now you have the set of assets that you can target to do something about. We know exactly what the universe of assets are that we have a problem with. Since 2004, the federal government has eliminated $4.5 billion worth of surplus and excess property. And we've set very aggressive goals for ourselves. It's almost a billion a year. You know, my boss likes to say 9 by 09, $9 billion by 2009 in terms of getting rid of those assets.
Can we move on to shared services and the financial management line of business initiative, which has been designed to improve cost, quality, and performance of financial management systems by leveraging shared service solutions? We're interested in hearing about your vision for the FMLOB and how has it progressed to date and changes you expect to see over the next 5 to 10 years.
We're in a complex environment, and I said that one of the biggest challenges we have is figuring out how to handle all this and do it more efficiently than we're doing today, because we're always in a tight resource environment. The financial management line of business essentially is a strategy for how we can help make government financial management more efficient, and it involves leveraging the private sector or leveraging the public sector where necessary to look at a kind of a buy once, use many philosophy, where rather than have every agency operating their own financial management system and developing their own infrastructure to do all the transaction processing, is it possible that we can essentially pool these efforts and get some economies of scale, and this new term we've come up with, economies of skill, to help us get the job done more effectively? We're trying to foster a limited number of stable and high-performing shared service providers that offer lower risk and lower cost options for agencies that are modernizing their financial systems. Essentially, you have co-located financial systems. You have places that you can go, like, and if it's a public sector solution, for example, the Department of Treasury's Bureau of Public Debt or the General Services Administration, where they're saying, we're not only going to house our own financial system, we're going to also house your financial system. We'll help you get the work done. Or we have private sector shared service providers as well that are hosting and can host multiple agencies at the same time. And what that does is it takes a key headache away from the CFO. It's just a lot of the grit work that goes on is being done by somebody else. And now you're more in an oversight role. You want to make sure that they're doing the work effectively, that they're meeting certain performance targets that you're setting for them. A very different role than you actually having to manage improvements, enhancements, changes to the system. The thought here is that by co-locating some of these functions in places that's their business, managing multiple financial systems, that's going to be a win-win.
Now, Danny, this model sounds very intuitive. Yet shared services has made fewer inroads into the federal government despite the benefits that you describe. Do you have a sense why this is the case, and how can this paradigm shift?
Well, it's a very good question. Now, the basic challenge that we have is if you take an agency that has a very unique approach to financial management, they do accounts payable their own way and have for years. The thought of moving to a new platform can be very daunting because, again, it goes back to change management. The government doesn't change very easily. And even something that sounds as mundane as accounts payable takes a long time and a lot of concerted effort and a lot of cultural change within the organization to get them to change their processes. And that's the rub with shared services, is that you've got to transition. It's almost like a market barrier. The problem is the travel costs. It's getting there. They can see the great solution on the horizon, but they're not exactly sure how to get there. And so we came together and realized that what we needed to do was to standardize government financial management more than it is today. And so what we set out to do and what we're in the middle of doing is issuing standardization requirements for all of our core financial management activities. This starts with the basic fundamental accounting code or accounting string that all agencies capture information on. We have diversity in our accounting codes, and now we're moving to a standard accounting code government-wide. We're looking to standardize things like accounts payable and accounts receivable and other types of basic financial management fundamentals. What we're asking agencies to do is over time, as they look to re-engineer their processes, as they look to consolidate change and gain efficiencies in how they do financial management, here's the standard federal template. Here's what you should move to. It's the default. And these are being published right now. Some of them are out for public comments. So this is a long-term effort. I will say that we are seeing some success and interest and movement to shared service providers. We have 7 agencies that are currently on shared service providers. 4 of them are shared service providers themselves. And we have 4 agencies that are actively in procurements to get to a shared service provider. There's a take-up rate here. I would envision that 10 years from now, you will see a dramatic shift in the number of agencies on shared service providers. And what we're doing today is making that shift more fluid by making the path very familiar to them.
What can the private sector do better to help improve the efficiency and effectiveness of our government's financial management? We will ask OMB Acting Controller Danny Werfel to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.